I'm delighted to be with you today. When Marilyn asked me to come and she told me that you were speaking about families, of course, that's a topic very near and dear to my heart. And as I thought about what could be helpful to you, the idea of understanding boundaries in families came to my mind, because so often in my therapy office, I'm dealing with families that are having difficulty with that issue in some form or another, either between husband and wife, parent and child, in-laws. So I thought I'd address that with you today. And the reality is, we all have difficult people in our lives, don't we? And we all have some challenging members in our families, right? You know, people who don't really want to take no for an answer, or people who don't take responsibility for their own stuff. How many of you have seen the movie What About Bob? Okay, that's a comedy, but to me as a therapist, it's a very terrifying movie. Because what it's about is really this client who does not know what a boundary is. He calls his therapist all hours of the night. He shows up at his door, at his home. He actually goes on the family, or finds them when they're on a family vacation. He just doesn't know where he stops and someone else begins. And we women, I think, in particular, have challenges with setting boundaries in our lives. You know, we feel like we need to be constantly available to the needs of others. I liked that poem very much. It had a very practical spin on kind of being okay with not being everything to all people or all children. But can you think of someone in your life, particularly a woman, can you think of a woman who seems really clear about who she is, about what she's about? She doesn't get pushed and pulled by other people. She makes her own choices. She lets her yes be yes and her no be no. And she seems to live with a lot of freedom. You know, she doesn't have a lot of guilt. She seems to be really clear. Do you know a person like that? Uh-huh. This is a person with good boundaries. What are boundaries? Let me just talk about what that is. Really, a boundary is essentially an invisible property line around you. It's between you and another person. It kind of marks off, again, where they start and where they stop and you begin. It's not an impenetrable wall, typically, unless you've had a lot of hurt in your life. It's more of a picket fence around your property line. And it's clarifying. It defines what you're responsible for and what somebody else is responsible for. For instance, within my picket fence, if I have a tree, and that tree leaves, as it is this fall, and the leaves fall to the ground, it's my responsibility to rake them up, put them in bags, and put them out on the curb, right? And my neighbor has a tree in his yard, and if the leaves fall, he's responsible to bag them up, wake them, rag them up, and put them on the curb, right? So I'm clear. This picket fence makes it clear what's mine and what's theirs. But a lot of times we have problems, and specifically problems in families, figuring out what is mine and what is theirs. There's wonderful descriptions in the Bible about families, and a lot of them have some serious boundary problems, and Abraham and Sarah were no exception. You may remember that when Abraham and Sarah traveled from Canaan down into Egypt because of the drought, when they got there, Abraham was really scared because Sarah was very beautiful, and he was afraid that he was going to get killed because someone would want his wife. So he pretended she was his sister, and sure enough, Pharaoh thought she was pretty good looking and decided he wanted her in his harem, and he took her and made her his wife. And then the plagues happened, and Pharaoh realized that something was amiss. And he angrily gave Sarah back and said, get out of my country, essentially. So in Genesis, fast forward to Genesis 16, verses 1 through 6, it's a wonderful passage that I think describes boundaries in a big way. So Abraham had been told by God that he was going to have a son. Not only would he have a son, but this son would be the father of many nations. As a matter of fact, the word Abram means father of many. So they were geared up for this son, but time was ticking, and he had become the ripe old age of 90, and it wasn't looking good. And so what does Sarah do? Sarah does what many women do, many of us do. She takes matters into her own hands, and she decides, I'm gonna fix this situation. I'm going to take my maidservant Hagar, and I'm going to give her to Abraham, and he's going to sleep with her, and she's going to have a child, and that child will become my child. That's what it was culturally in those days. Your maidservant can have the baby and you get to claim it as your own. So she thought this was a good plan, and of course she presented this to Abraham, and Abraham's going, oh, okay, yeah, we'll do that. And she was probably a much younger woman. And so anyway, he does sleep with Hagar. Hagar has a child. And during the pregnancy, she began to treat Sarah really contemptuously. And Sarah was enraged by this. And she went to Abraham and she said, did she take responsibility for her choice of doing this? No. She said, Abraham, it's all your fault. You made me do this. I mean, this is all your fault. And Abraham was you know, surprised, I'm sure. But what did Abraham do? Did he rake the leaves up in his own yard and take care of business? No. He said, he just stepped back and said, do whatever you want with her. That's how he solved the problem, kind of hands off. And so, sure enough, Sarah really mistreated Hagar. Hagar ended up running out into the wilderness with her then-born son Ishmael. And as the story finishes, God does lure her, or encourage her to come back to be with Abraham and Sarah. And Sarah does eventually give birth to Isaac. So what can we learn from this story about our topic today? One is that we are most influenced to cross over boundaries by the people we're most emotionally close to, aren't we? We're pushed most by the people we love the most to get unclear about our boundaries. We often cross boundaries also when we want control of something. When something's not happening in our time or in our way, in order to fix it, we tend to cross over a boundary. Sarah wanted control of the outcome. She wanted a son. She also probably wanted to avoid embarrassment or stop the embarrassment of being barren. So she took charge. Abraham's passivity, though, was also a problem with boundaries. He wasn't, as I say, raking up his own leaves. He was kind of passing it off. He wanted to avoid the humiliation of not having that son and the conflict. He wanted to avoid the conflict between the women. And so he didn't take charge of what was inside of his picket fence. So whenever we have a failure to hold on to our boundaries, it's going to cause problems. In this situation, it led to Hagar being contemptuous towards Sarah. It led to the jealousy and competition between Hagar and Sarah. It led to the strife between Sarah and Abraham. It led Sarah to treat Hagar with cruelty. And ultimately, you might remember that Hagar did have Ishmael, Sarah did have Isaac, and the enmity between the Arab and the Jew, which were they were the fathers of those peoples, continues to this day. So sometimes our choices have some long-term consequences when we cross over our boundaries. So why talk about these? And why is it important in family life? I think this is a critically important issue in every decision that we make. If we're not clear about what we're responsible for and we're not responsible for, we're going to suffer. If we're too responsible about things, if we take charge of things that we really have no business taking charge of, we're going to feel exhausted. We're going to feel resentful. You know, if we go and take the bag of leaves that's in our neighbor's yard and put them in ours and then have to deal with them, or if we allow our neighbor to blow their leaves into our yard and then we rake them up and put them away, we're going to get, over time, tired and resentful. On the other hand, if we fail to take responsibility for what's in our yard, we tend to blame other people. We tend to be irresponsible. And it's kind of like blowing our leaves into our neighbor's yard. You know, they're not going to want to be our neighbor after a while, right? That has consequences. So boundaries are really important because without them, you are at the mercy of the agendas and pressures of other people. Your time, your energy, your life can get spent in the ways others intend as opposed to you. If you have good boundaries, you're going to live with less anxiety. You're going to know what's yours and what's not yours. You're going to live with less guilt. You're going to live with more freedom. And they allow you, this is the most important thing, and it's true in the story of Abraham and Sarah. If you have good boundaries about what you're supposed to be doing and not supposed to be doing, and you have some more clarity about that, you're able to hear God's intentions for you more clearly, rather than the voice of other people kind of dictating what you should do and what you should be about and how you should prioritize your time. Families are really, really powerful in helping us shape what our boundaries are. What we learn about boundaries has the power to shape how we feel about ourselves, how we do or don't do intimate relationships, how we sustain intimate relationships, how we handle hardships and challenges in our lives. If we were respected and we were trained to be respectful of others, we're going to be more clear about what's inside our picket fence and what's outside our picket fence. When we give of ourselves, we're going to be giving out of choice rather than out of fear or compulsion or guilt. If we were raised with poor boundaries, we're going to be confused, and we're going to find it more difficult to set limits and to respect the limits of others. Another reason why families are so formative is that in families, we really, those are the close relationships, and we fear disconnection. If we set a boundary with someone or we say something firm, we fear that we might lose relationship, at least temporarily at some level. So we really don't want to set a boundary or speak our mind or say what's on our heart because we're fearful that someone might pull away or disconnect. You know, the son who feels obliged to take care of his emotionally needy mother to the neglect of his wife, afraid to say, make a line. Or parents making their child feel guilty about moving away. In my situation, when my husband and I were first married, before kids, my parents had loaned us a sum of money to buy our first townhome. And it was maybe October, about this time of year, and I was on the phone with my mom, and my mom says to me, and we had decided that we were going to go to Utah to visit his parents for Christmas. We hadn't seen them for a long time. So I'm on the phone with my mom several months before, and I explained to her that we were going to be going to Utah for Christmas. And she says to me, "Funny, Laura, how you can afford to go to Utah for Christmas, but you can't afford your down payment." What was going on inside of me? Okay. Yeah, there was a boundary crossing there. I'll tell you in a little bit what I did with that. But yeah, so this happens. Our families are really, and sometimes it's really insidious until you stop and think about it. And then you realize, oh yeah, I did get kind of pushed right there. So some of you might be thinking, yeah, but aren't we just supposed to meet the needs of other people? Isn't really that what we're designed to do? And I want to, what really speaks to me in this is if I look at Jesus and how he did boundaries, he was a really, really good boundary keeper. If you think about the wedding at Cana of Galilee, okay, here is a wedding where the wine's run out and his mom, his mother, comes to him and says, you know, the wine is out. And he had some very clear words for his mother. He said, "Woman, this is not our problem. My time has not yet come." See, he was so clear and he was so tuned in to his father that he knew what his timing was. He knew what he needed to be about. He wasn't going to get pushed even by his mother that he loved. And you look at the situation with Mary and Martha and Lazarus. They were very, very close to Jesus, very, very intimate friends. And Lazarus was dying. He was sick to the point of dying. And his sisters, Mary and Martha, sent word, because Jesus was a couple towns over, sent word and said, "Please come, please come. You know, Lazarus is dying." And the scripture on this is just so interesting to me. It says this: "So although Jesus loved Martha, Mary, and Lazarus, he stayed where he was the next 2 days." Now, what does that look like? Does it look like he doesn't care? You know, think about what the disciples must have thought of that. Knowing how close Jesus was to them, you know, they probably expected that he'd run to his friend's side. But he waited the next 2 days. And when he arrived in Bethany, the first thing Martha said to him was, "Lord, if you had only been here," because Lazarus had died. But Jesus knew God's intention. He knew he was going to raise Lazarus. They didn't know, so they had intentions for Jesus and what he should do, but he was so clear. He did what he knew he needed to do. He had incredible boundaries. Jesus wasn't bound to the tyranny of the urgent needs around him. His clarity allowed him to stay connected to the Father instead of at the mercy of the demands and needs of others. He had really incredible boundaries. So why don't we? Why don't we have good boundaries? What's our problem? Why do we struggle so with this? You know, a lot of times we struggle with boundaries because our boundaries were crossed as a child. We were made to feel kind of accountable or responsible for our parents' behavior at times. Maybe if we had an angry parent, we felt kind of responsible to walk on the eggshells and make everything okay so we didn't see the anger. Or maybe we lived in a home where there were some guilt messages or messages of obligation or subtle or not so subtle forms of manipulation. I have one client who was really made to feel like a burden. She was very neglected, and anytime she needed anything, the message was, "You're too much. You're too much for me." So she always felt burdened. Any of us who have experienced abuse know the boundary violation that can be so confusing. Our physical or sexual or emotional boundary gets crossed, and it creates some confusion about what is ours and what is someone else's. So that can be why we don't have good boundaries. We also, if we didn't have adequate limits as a child, we also have difficulty with boundaries because we didn't learn to respect others' boundaries, and we were allowed to disrespect others. So that can be a reason. Another one is anxiety. You know, a lot of us do have some anxiety about this, particularly about this fear of disconnection. Those of us who are pleasers like myself have a special amount of anxiety. We want to make people happy. We want to. I'm a recovering pleaser, I'm happy to say. You know, you want to do the right thing, and you end up taking on the problems of others, like, you know, a mother's chronic loneliness, feeling like you always need to be there, even if it's at the expense of your children. Or a child's irresponsibility. You feel it's your role to rescue them and make sure they don't have pain. Or a friend's unending crisis. You feel like you need to constantly be available. Or that vacant position at the church they're urging you to take. Well, someone's got to do it, you know? We have difficulty saying no and setting a limit, often due to the fear of disconnection. We also have difficulty because we have some faulty thinking about boundaries themselves. We think boundaries are kind of selfish. Boy, if you have a boundary, you're just, you know, it's all about you. Not so. There's a wonderful passage in Galatians 6:2, which I love. It talks about how we are to share each other's burdens, but we're also supposed to carry our own daily load. So when I think of sharing each other's burden, it's as if our friend has this huge boulder on their back and they're unable to carry it by themselves. Many of your prayer requests today were situations where people really need you to come shoulder their burden with them, whether it's illness or whatever. One of my dearest friends is struggling with the later stages of ALS, and she needs her friends near her. So when we have a friend that is suffering, that needs our help, we do come alongside and help them share that burden and shoulder that boulder. But on the other hand, each of us have our own daily load. It's as if we each have a backpack on our back, and in our backpack are the things we are responsible for and need to take care of. And if we go around and take that person's backpack and that person's and that person's and put them all on our back, what's going to happen? Yeah, we're going to get loaded down, and they're not going to have the learning that takes place when they carry their own. And so that's the difference between those two. Refusing to carry the backpack of another is actually not selfish. It's good stewardship. We're responsible to others and for ourselves. Another idea is, if I start doing this, I'll be rejected, and others are going to likely reject our boundaries. They're likely going to push back when we do have boundaries. Some people only really want to hear our yes. I had a child, a family that I was working with, and the child was a 10-year-old boy, and he was in Little League. And he had a practice that afternoon, but he was sick. He was feverish. He had about 103-degree fever, wasn't feeling good at all. And the father calls and says, "You get him to practice," to the mother. "He needs to be at practice. Because if he didn't go to practice that day, he wasn't going to play in the game for the weekend." So the mother had a decision to make. And she did what was in the best interest of the child and did not take the child to practice. The father came home. He was enraged that she had not taken the child to practice, but she had kept her boundary, and she did what she felt God telling her to do. She also had a really good boundary with him. She said to him, "I love you too much to do harm to our child. I think you would live to regret that." So she held her boundary with his anger as well. So it might mean that you have to be rejected at least temporarily in order to make for a healthier relationship eventually. Another one is, if I set boundaries, I'll hurt other people. I have a brother who has had an alcohol problem, and I had indicated to him that he wouldn't be driving my children. That was hurtful to him, but it was necessary. Limits done in love usually foster growth, and they increase the respect. Another one is, boundaries mean I'm angry. Well, you know, anger can sometimes tell us that our boundaries have been violated. So it can be a good sign, a good kind of tip-off that maybe something's been crossed. And we can use that anger, we can kind of challenge it to begin to address the issue. And you know, as you begin to set boundaries for yourself, it's amazing how your anger and resentment dissipates. It really is. You become so much freer. One day, I was picking up my daughter when she was in junior high. And as I drove in, she was talking and chatting with a bunch of friends, a group of friends. And I kind of pulled off to the side, and I saw her see me. So we made eye contact. And I waited. I waited about 3 minutes. And then I waited about 5 minutes. And then I waited about 10 minutes, and I am starting to steam. I am getting really worked up. I'm thinking, I've got a lot to do. She's disrespecting my time. And I started to rehearse the litany I was going to give her when she got in the car. She was going to get slammed. And then it dawned on me. I have a choice. I can stay, or I can go. So I thought, I'm going to give her one more minute. So I gave her one more minute. She didn't come. So then I drove off and went home. And about 45 minutes later, she walks in the door and she says, "What was up with that? Where'd you go?" And I just looked at her and I said, "Well, honey, I knew you saw me, so I kind of figured you had another ride." And she said, "Oh." We never had that problem again. When I drove up, she hopped in that van. I never had that again. And you know, I didn't have to get angry. What I had to do was figure out that I had a choice. Our relationship was better as a result of that. There was more respect and less anger. So boundaries actually can help you not be angry eventually. So I'm going to take just a couple of minutes to share with you how to set good boundaries. How do you go about setting good boundaries if you haven't done it? And sometimes you might be thinking, "Oh, that's for other people. I'm too much of a softie. I couldn't do that." All of us can get a little better at boundaries. All of us can do something that could help us both create more health in the relationships we have and more respect. So the first thing I'd like you to do, and I did put these on the handout there, is look at your own life situation. And see where there is a boundary problem that exists with your parents, with your siblings, with your children. Where have you lost control of your property? Do you take responsibility for a sibling or a parent or a child? Because we're really responsible for ourselves and to other people, not for other people. Do you fail to enforce consequences and end up paying for somebody else's behavior? That happens a lot in parenting, I know. Do you fear disconnection if you set a reasonable limit with a family member? Do you find yourself reacting to the requests or demands of others as if you have no choice in the matter? These are all indications you might have some boundary things you might want to consider. Another thing that's helpful is just to notice your feelings. If you're feeling angry or resentful or fearful in any relationship in your family, that's a really good tip that you want to pay attention to. A lot of times our feelings are kind of like the dashboard on our car. They signal when something under the hood needs attention. And so our feelings can tip us off that maybe I should pay attention to some way in which I'm feeling like either I haven't set a boundary or my boundary's getting crossed. So begin to look at that and then begin to define your boundaries. What is it you'd want? What would you want instead? Imagine yourself expressing yourself directly and assertively to that person that you're struggling with a boundary. And to do this, you want to kind of state what you want. What is it I really want in this relationship? What behavior of the other is interfering with what you want, what you desire? Think about what you will and won't allow. And then acknowledge that the other person has a choice in how they respond to you. And that how they respond doesn't need to impact whether or not you set the boundary. And then the next thing, once you've defined what you want, is do it. Just do it. Confront the issue. Verbalize your boundaries in a very matter-of-fact, strong, but really benevolent manner. You know, you don't want to be accusing and harsh. You want to just state it. Those are the most powerful boundaries, is a calmly stated, respectful boundary. For instance, it might look like this. You might say, you know, I want us to have a strong marriage. That's what you want. I know your mother has many needs, but when she calls you frequently and you take that much time away from the kids and I feel neglected. I'd like you to come up with a plan for limiting your availability to her while assuring her that you're going to be checking in with her on a limited basis. That might be one way you set a boundary. Or someone's angry with you. I can see that you're angry. When you lower your voice and can speak more respectfully, I'm willing to have this conversation. You could do that with angry family members. Or if you have a drinking family member that's creating some havoc, you know, I'm concerned that your drinking is becoming a problem. I miss you. You know, the kids and I are afraid that we're losing you, and we don't want that. One way of stating what you need. You know, oftentimes we think, well, let's just kind of blow this over. And we pleasers are really good about that. Just let's ignore it. Let's just pretend it's not happening. Maybe it'll get better. But the reality is that things left unsaid often are interpreted as agreement to the other person's actions or expectations. And if when we're indirect, sometimes we try and beat around the bush. Or when we're indirect, it either comes off as weak, or it can come off as actually manipulative when we're not direct. Being direct is a lot clearer. I love this verse in Leviticus 19:17. It says, do not nurse hatred in your heart for any of your relatives. Confront people directly so that you will not be held guilty for their sin. And I was thinking a little bit about that last part of the verse. There's a way in which when we don't address the issue, we're kind of colluding with their bad behavior. We're not helping bring light to the situation. There's a way in which your confrontation or addressing the issue brings it to light and opens the door for the possibility of change. And when we keep silent, we actually hinder that change from happening. It does matter how we do it, but doing it is important. And then after addressing the issue, you want to set a consequence. And the consequence is something that's just going to protect you. It's not about controlling or changing the other person. For instance, my daughter borrowed my car, came back, and there was a gash in the dashboard. So my consequence was, you're not going to be driving that car for 30 days, and then we'll see how it goes. Or with my brother, you won't be driving my kids. Or if your parents come over and they're critical of your spouse, it might be, you'll be invited to come back when you can treat my mate respectfully. They can be very simple. They're very deliberate. They're not done in anger, as you can see. They're appropriately severe. You don't want to do something really harsh to something that's a minor infraction. You know, if they aren't doing their dishes and they're leaving them out all the time, well, maybe they can cook for themselves for a while. Or if it's more severe, if a partner has had an affair, a husband has had an affair, they may need to leave for a period of time or set a much more severe limit. So these are enforceable, they're not threats, and they're really respectful. They don't humiliate the other person. They simply state state what you want for what's inside your fence. And after you set a consequence, the real key is you need to enforce them. You need to be kind of consistent and kind of hold your ground. If you've let a behavior of a family member go on for a really long time, you can bet they're gonna test it. They're gonna push back. They may tend to override your boundary. and you just need to let them know that you're going to be strictly enforcing it. Let's say, you know, a parent is dropping in unannounced all the time, and you say, you know, no, mom, you know, I need a phone call before you come, and she keeps doing that. You may have to set a stricter limit, say, you know, for the next 15 or 30 days, we're not going to have a visit until you can really respect the fact that it's important for me to have a phone call. You want to be really non-punitive. You want to be clear that your desire is to have a better, more respectful relationship. And if you get guilt messages, you know, like messages that make you feel guilty, just gently point them out. You know, mom, I'm hearing that there's a guilt message in that, and that's not going to be very effective with me. You know, so if you hear it, just gently set a limit to it. I know this sounds pretty clear and direct, but it's so helpful to creating healthy relationship. And then the final thing is accept the temporary or long-term loss of relationship. That's how they might react. They might cut you off. They might not like it. And you know, keep the invitation open if things change. But you might have to prepare yourself for that. The other family member might resist the limits you set. They might even call your boundaries unfair or hurtful or mean. But it's important to remain kind and firm. The boundary you're suggesting just says, you know, you cannot do what you want all the time. And that's hard for them to hear, so you have to repeat it over and over and over. So I can hunch all of you are probably experiencing this in a little different way. Maybe you're thinking about the boundaries in your own life that are getting crossed. And if you're the one who is setting the boundaries, you may, and if you're a pleaser like me, you may feel like a bad guy when you first do it, you know, initially. But if you can hang in there and stay calm and deliberate about it, things do get better. And when things get better, you can hear God's voice much more clearly about what he wants for you instead of what others want for you. It's so clarifying. And if you're the one that needs to learn respect of others' boundaries, releasing the need to control and trusting God, you're in good company. A lot of us are there too. And Sarah had to learn the hard way, but eventually she did have her son Isaac. Eventually she became the mother of all Israel and was blessed. But learning to respect the boundaries of others is important for we moms and we wives as well. You know, boundary issues are different in different stages of life. We always have to navigate this turf. We've never arrived in the sense of, oh, I've got great boundaries all the time. As a matter of fact, this last week I crossed boundaries twice with my daughter, my adult daughter. She bought a home and she's putting in a yard. And of course, I love gardening. And so I had all kinds of opinions about the plant she was going to put in that yard. And I just had to rein myself back. I had this urge to kind of get in there and have too much of a say. She was also having a housewarming party, and it looked like it was going to rain last weekend on her housewarming party. And I said to my husband, hey, you know, Carrie, it might rain. You know, and so outside barbecue, what's going to happen? And he looked at me and he said, Laura, it's her party. And I thought, oh, yeah, you're right. So sometimes we can be reminding each other about this. But we have different seasons of our life. And right now, I'm an in-law. For the last 5 years, I've been an in-law. And that's a whole new territory, right? Those of you who are young moms go, yeah. And those of you who are in-laws go, yeah. This is tough. You've got these two different families, and you're trying to merge them. And it starts with wedding planning, right? Yeah, it starts with how many are they going to have if on their side, and how many do we get to have on our side, and can we have a little more, and you know, all that navigation around that, or accepting new traditions. You know, Christmas Eve was always sacred in my family. It was a very special time. Well, my son's wife, they didn't grow up doing that on Christmas Eve, and so she had different ideas. And so as a mother-in-law, you have to kind of learn to flow with that and learn to kind of let go and learn how to respect the new traditions that the young family is creating. And that involves respecting their schedule and their space too. When I'm watching the kids, I need to respect the schedule that she's set up for the kids. You know, it may not be how I would do it. They may not raise them how I would do it, but you got to really just be supportive and cooperative and honor their boundaries. And what do you do when your child complains about their spouse? What do you do? Do you go, oh, tell me more? Or do you say, honey, I am sure you guys are going to really be able to navigate that well. I look forward to hearing how you do it. Or do you do that? So we always have an opportunity every day to make decisions about how we respond to some of this stuff. I gave you some handouts today. One is called How to Be a Great In-Law, and the other is Setting Boundaries with In-Laws, just to help you. I know that that's an issue for most of you. Just to help you. You can read those later, but I'm hoping those will be helpful to you. So let me share with you how I responded to my mom's comment. I happened to have a moment of clarity at the time, and I thought about it for about 10 seconds, and I said to her, Mom, Dad, they were both on the phone, Mom, Dad, I love you both, and we enjoy spending the holidays with you. Gary and I have decided to go to Utah for Christmas. Really appreciate the money you gave us, the loan for the townhome, but if there are any strings attached, we're going to give it back. And there was a moment of silence on the other end, and I heard, oh, no, honey, no, I didn't mean that, so she kind of backpedaled a bit, and, in 41 years of marriage, we have not had any more problems of that nature. We set that boundary early, and I think my mom and dad knew that, so that's just sort of an example of how if you set the boundary, healthy people are going to respond well to it. Unhealthy people aren't going to respond so well to it. Okay, so that's kind of something to keep in mind as well. So we've had a fantastic relationship with my parents ever since. So we're called to love, and we can't love well if we're trying to control or disrespecting the freedom of the other. And we're not loving well when we allow them to mistreat us and we provide no challenge to them that helps them grow. Love is sometimes tough, but it really is the only path to healing and restoration and a really loving relationship. It takes a lot of courage rather than passivity, and it takes trust rather than taking things to our own hands. When we are in relationship to our Heavenly Father and we're really seeking to hear His voice, we're more able to say yes with clarity and purpose, and we're more able to say no without guilt and with freedom. It's my prayer for you that you will be able to hear His voice and become clear about what it is you need to be doing, what you're responsible for and not responsible for, to the glory of God and to the health of your families. Let me pray for you. Lord, we thank you for your love and how you came into our world, crossed a boundary which was not a boundary to you, and entered our human existence. And we thank you for the character of Jesus and how He reflects you. And Lord, we want to be like Him, and we want to have the clarity of spending time with you and getting your mind about the relationships of our life. So help us to do that. Help us get clear about what we're responsible for and what we're not responsible for, to the end that our relationships can be places of health and healing and hope and reflective of your goodness and your grace and your strength. We pray it in Jesus' name. Amen. Thank you.